Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
There are a lot of people who are St. Pauli fans, but just don't know it yet.
St. Pauli will always be owned by the members. And if that means that we never ever go up to First Division again, well, then that's it. It's okay for me. I follow my club in whatever division we play.
I've been to an FC Barcelona Champions League match, 85,000 screaming people, but that couldn't compare to this. It was just so intense.
Hello and welcome to Who Are You? A monthly podcast that's usually about the football clubs of Great Britain. But for this episode, we had to make an exception. Every month we travel to a different football club and find out more about the issues affecting them. Every club has a story to tell, from those battling for trophies to those struggling to stay afloat. Over the course of this podcast, we will aim to discover what really matters to fans, placing their stories in a broader footballing context. We'll go to any club at any level, in the men's and women's games. Before we start, a reminder that if you enjoy this podcast, we'd appreciate it if you could leave us a review on iTunes and spread the word through social media. In this episode, we've ditched our UK-only rule and flown to Hamburg for a club unlike any other. This is FC St. Pauli. A German second-tier club with a trophy cabinet that would delight a tired silver polisher. FC St. Pauli are at first glance a fairly ordinary side. The other Hamburg side, HSV, have a huge stadium and have actually won things. St. Pauli are just the smaller club in Germany's second biggest city, representing the St. Pauli district of Hamburg, home of the infamous Reeperbahn. However, those with more than a passing interest in German football know that St. Pauli are far from ordinary. This is a club that is followed all around the world. But not because of the football, because of the ethos of the club itself. Meaning the club's influence spreads well beyond the terraces of their home ground, the Millerntor. Mike Krukemeyer is a lifelong St. Pauli fan and presents the Millerntor podcast.
My name is Mike. I write for the St. Pauli fanzine Der Übersteiger, which has been published first time in 1993. Normally, if you talk to someone who is somehow in football, the good thing is that you don't need to describe St. Pauli, because nearly everyone in the world has somehow a definition of what St. Pauli is. And this is really an exception, because we never won anything. So if you ask people for other clubs who are in Division 2 in whatever country, normally, if you are outside of that country, no one has really a clue what this club stands for. And this is totally different with St. Pauli. We are well known for being political on the left wing. In the end, I think St. Pauli is one of the very, very few clubs in the world that are really, really famous for never winning anything, but for their supporters and also their political attitude. This is more than just a football club.
St. Pauli weren't born left-wing. Instead, the fans' movement was created out of a number of factors. One of them being the squatter movements in Hamburg in the early 80s. Another being a reaction of the prevalence of neo-Nazi hooligans at German football matches.
Before the end of the 80s, the club was just a small club in a big German town, and only 2,000, 3,000 people were going to the games in the second division, and there was a huge gap to the local rivals, and you never would have imagined that this club could become that popular in the end. Yeah, then at that time, in the end of the 80s, we just squeezed into a certain spot which was open for a new club, because at that time Germany really had some problems with Nazis in the stadiums, and at that moment it was just impossible to go as a left person politically interested to a football game. It was just not usual. And with St. Pauli squeezing into that, it just became a possibility to go there as a more or less intelligent person to watch a football game and being politically interested. At that time, no one would have imagined that this club would at one stage be one of the most popular clubs from Germany, also in the other countries. And in the end, like I said, we never won a title. We never have been for one international game. So it's still funny or strange or unbelievable.
St. Pauli has no place for homophobia, fascism, sexism and racism. It says so on the stadium and on hundreds and thousands of stickers dotted around the district. This club wears its heart and soul on its sleeve. But they do more than simply say they're against prejudice. They act.
The G20 meeting in the last couple of days were, producing some headlines, and our club managed to have some protesters in our stadium.
In Hamburg, here the Air Force One, das Flugzeug von US-Präsident Donald Trump, und sein Abflug wird hier in wenigen Augenblicken erwartet.
This summer, the Millantor Stadion forced the world's media to pay attention as it housed 200 anti-G20 protesters and set up an alternative media centre, giving demonstrators against the G20's arrival in Hamburg a voice they felt was denied by various mainstream media outlets. Former head coach and current technical director Ewald Leinen even joined in the demonstrations himself. But the club and fans are not one and the same. The fans have shaped the club's direction for years and will do all they can to keep the club in check. 6 years ago, fans protested one of the directors' boxes becoming a miniature strip club, and there has been strong opposition to St. Pauli's current kit manufacturers, Under Armour, as part of their business is the sale of hunting equipment.
It's difficult, of course, and I think it's an ongoing discussion every single day. What kind of selling your values, selling things in general, merchandise and so on, what can you do as a football club? What should you do? For example, our stadium name, Millantor, is still not for sale. This has been decided by the club, by the supporters, by the members of the club. So if the club would like to sell the name, like many, many other clubs in Germany already did, and also in the other countries, of course, they need to ask the members first.
So St. Pauli became a footballing oddity. Anarchic, free-spirited, not beholden to the greed of modern football. The Jolly Roger, or Totenkopf flag, became a perfect symbol for the club that would come to be known as the Pirates of the League. This buccaneering spirit gradually gained them more and more fans from outside their city, and from outside their country.
My name's Nick Davidson. I'm the author of Pirates, Punks and Politics, the first English language book about FC St. Pauli.
Pirates, Punks and Politics is probably the best English language resource that any global budding FC St. Pauli fan could hope for. It combines an in-depth history of the club with Nick's personal journey following the boys in brown. It succinctly encapsulates why non-Germans have flocked to the Millantor from far and wide. Nick, traditionally a Watford fan, grew disheartened with the sanitisation of English football and found St. Pauli through a magazine article in 442. His story is not uncommon. Football fans discover St. Pauli through unconventional sources all the time. Who knows, maybe there's a couple listening to this podcast right now.
My name's Sean, and I'm one half of Fell in Love with a Girl, an FC St. Pauli podcast 7,000 kilometres removed.
And I'm Samantha, the other half.
The better half. A guy that I went to college with gave me a Subside Sport catalog because I'm a bit of a kit nerd, and I was flipping through the pages of this old paper catalog. This is probably in, I want to say, around 2000. It's the usual selection of top tier shirts and national team shirts, and there was a third of a page dedicated to this German club that I'd never heard of called St. Pauli, and they had two logos. They had a cathedral and they had a Totenkopf, and I had no idea what it was about, but they were on my radar from then, and then I kind of became the cliche of the supporter whose second favorite club was St. Pauli. And I came to a point in my life where I went through a bit of a bitter separation, And it kind of changed my perspective. Basically, I didn't want to love anything with half my heart anymore. I wanted to grab everything full on. So I one day declared my allegiance to St. Pauli in front of Samantha. I cranked up Hell's Bells in the car as she's driving along this rural Alberta secondary highway, and disavowed myself of my previous club and said, I'm a St. Pauli supporter now.
The idea of a genuine alternative for disillusioned football fans is enticing. But are St. Pauli really all they're cracked up to be? Here is my co-producer David, who went over to Germany to sample the Millantor experience, albeit for a friendly, as St. Pauli took on the Bundesliga's Werder Bremen.
Outside the ground, there's a fair bit of mud. I'm glad I didn't wear my nice trainers. In front of the Sudkurve, there's live music, and very reasonably priced currywurst stalls do a roaring trade. There are t-shirts with anarchic slogans, English football shirts, stickers absolutely everywhere, anti-G20 graffiti, massive queues snaking around the ground, strong whiffs of tobacco, and finally, as I manoeuvre into a position on the Gegengerade, I hear the first notes of AC/DC's Hell's Bells. Werder and St. Pauli fans mix together and create probably the best atmosphere I've experienced at a friendly. The home side win 2-1 in front of a crowd of over 20,000. Drinking plenty of Astras outside the Jolly Roger, an Irish stag do sings A Team of Gary Breen's, and countless Germans come up to me and point at the Stoke badge on my shirt. The two clubs have recently announced a strategic partnership, whatever that means. The mood is jovial and welcoming. Even for a friendly, St. Pauli has not disappointed. The Jolly Roger pub is as popular with visitors as it is with locals. From wall to wall, it is plastered in stickers. Not fresh out the bag Panini fare, but political stickers. Stickers professing love for St. Pauli and hatred for Nazis. Hatred for HSV, hatred for the G20, and plenty more besides. The anti-fascist, anti-homophobic, anti-racist message is strong here. Also heavily represented are the many overseas fan groups of FC St. Pauli, Yorkshire St. Pauli, Manchester St. Pauli, London St. Pauli, New York St. Pauli, Toronto St. Pauli. I could go on.
And we took our chance to talk to just some of those who have taken St. Pauli global.
Hi, I'm Mark Palmer, and I'm one of the co-founders of FC St. Pauli Toronto Fans. We're one of the newest international fan clubs for FC St. Pauli, which plays out of Hamburg, Germany, in the Bundesliga 2. For me, it's mostly through family. All of my family, for the most part, are in Germany, most of them in Hamburg. Most of them are St. Pauli fans. I'd see a lot of dialogue coming from their end about how the club was doing, whether they were doing well or not doing well, if they were close to relegation or if they were close to promotion, that kind of thing. You'd see all those kinds of ebbs and flows. St. Pauli seemed to be a little bit different. They're a little outside of the mold that you might find in the Premier League or even the regular Bundesliga. And so I kind of delved into it a little bit more and landed on their values and thought this is fantastic because it kind of reflected many of or all of the things that I believed in. They always want to do well on the pitch as well as in the hearts and minds of their fans and other football fans. And then I guess the turning point for me was when I went to see a match a little over a year ago. It was actually the last home match of the season at the Millerntor. And I was visiting family there, and I was hoping to go see a match. And my cousin said, you know, every game is sold out no matter what. And this is the last match of the season. Don't expect anything. And about 3 hours before the match, she got a call from a friend of hers that found scrounged up two tickets and said, we have to go. And I was just over the moon walking in, and how you greeted, the enthusiasm is just so infectious, and people are so welcoming, and they're so into the match. It's a real sense of community. And I mean, I've been to an FC Barcelona Champions League match, 85,000 screaming people, but even that couldn't compare to this. It was just so intense in a good way. And one of the people there who had helped get me a ticket, he said, you know, you should try and start up an FC St. Pauli fan club in Toronto. And I thought, yeah, that's not a bad idea. And he came back, started doing my research, found a place to have our meetups, to watch the the matches and reached out to New York as well as clubs in Glasgow and Leeds with Yorkshire, who are also very, very active and were really, really supportive, and just kind of got things going, learned some things from them, and then just tried to promote our club and get the word out and find members and so forth for the viewing. So, and it just kind of took off from there. Everyone was really supportive, and I think a lot of that stems from the St. Pauli culture. It's so inclusive and welcoming, and I never came across anyone that kind of put up roadblocks. They always opened doors for me, and that was just really just carrying on what I'd felt at the Millen Tour when I saw that first match. It was just a great experience, and it's unending. It continues.
Hi, I'm Sean, and I'm an FC St. Pauli fan from Brooklyn.
Hi, this is Soren, also an FC St. Pauli fan, born and raised near Hamburg in Germany. I've been living in New York since 2005, and I just love it here. The part in Germany where I grew up in northern Germany was very rural, and there were like a lot of, you know, like right-wing scumbags around in the small towns. And when I first got in touch with St. Pauli, there was a relegation game against Stuttgart Kickers. Like, some of my friends took me basically to a Hamburg Tour game, and at that time I hated soccer. I just couldn't stand it. I thought it was the most boring thing, and I, you know, especially like with all the hooligan and Nazi scumbag bullshit going on in Europe at that time, in the 80s and 90s, it just like was disgusting in my opinion. But like I said, friends dragged me to the first St. Pauli game. It was just an amazing like first experience for me. Like, the atmosphere in the stadium was just like indescribable, the like how intense people got. And like from that day on, basically it turned me into true St. Pauli supporter. I mean, it's just like the scene with all like-minded people, like at the time or still basically, this is really what got me into it. And not necessarily the sport, but like the politics and the community feeling.
A friend who I met in a German class found out that I liked football, said, oh, you should meet all of my friends that follow this team you've never heard of, and brought me along to a couple of events. And then I started coming regularly without her. And I fell in love with St. Pauli through the New York City-based fan club. And because the people there were great and the community there is wonderful, you know, it just kept me coming back and coming back.
The St. Pauli New York fan group basically found each other, or it started basically through some European soccer-related internet forum where some New York-based people like found each other. And then there was one guy who used to live in Germany, and he somehow like got interested or kind of connected with St. Pauli. And they started then meeting and watching the first games in a Celtic pub in Queens, as far as I know. Shortly after, they found this bar in Brooklyn, the East River Bar, which is until today basically still our home. They made that bar basically their own base, home base, and as soon as I found out about it, I joined them at East River Bar. And at the beginning, it was even though there were like a lot of people like who supported the St. Pauli supporters group here locally within New York, there were only always like a bunch of like maybe 4, 5, 6 guys, mostly like 3 or 4 of us. Maybe like 2 years later, there was a big breakthrough because of an article that was published in the German magazine, the Spiegel. Because of one of the visitors we had from Germany there, who was on vacation, and he was an independent journalist basically, and at the end of this vacation he figured that he has to write something about it, and after that was published basically we got a lot more traffic there, and the group basically grew tremendously from just a couple of people like to sometimes 30, 40, 50 people at the games.
I think one of the things we're really proud of is that we keep a really good atmosphere going in the bar. I mean, people who come to visit us from Germany, and we get a lot of visitors. I mean, almost every week we have, you know, tourists who are in New York, people who know about us or because of the Spiegel article, or who did a Google search, or, you know, for whatever reason know that we exist. They've seen our t-shirts in the stadium, will come and watch a match with us. And the people say that it's just as good as watching a game in Hamburg. There's singing and cheering and chanting in the bar. The bartenders are all into it. The regulars at the bar have all become fans. We had a big fundraiser party at the end of the year, and I think we had more than 100 people there to watch the game and hang out and do a raffle and play some games and eat some food with us. Basically, we do two things very consistently as far as charity work goes. Every year, we pick a cause that we're going to raise money for, and at every single game, we have a can that we pass around and ask people to donate whatever they feel like they can. So, you know, we get whatever people's leftover change, or, you know, if you're leaving the city tomorrow and you have a bunch of American money you don't know what to do with, just put it in the bucket for us. And then at the end of the year, that all goes toward some sort of charitable cause that we've picked during the year. We've done a couple of different things. A couple years ago, it was a charity that works with homeless people in the city. This past year, because of the political climate, we wanted to make sure that we were putting it towards something that was going to be helpful for immigrants in this country. And so we donated it to a really great group that works to provide legal assistance for people who are seeking asylum and going through the really complicated visa process.
The overseas St. Pauli groups were fascinating and something rather unusual. These are largely made up of people who have chosen to support a club, not because of success, family, or geographical connection. These people have chosen St. Pauli because of what they feel it stands for, politically, socially, philosophically.
My name is Gary Padgett. I live in Lincoln. I'm actually, as well as a St. Pauli fan, a Huddersfield Town fan. For me, St. Pauli is absolutely not... It's not really about football, and it's not always about politics. It's more about people. Because when I first started going, there was like a group of about five or six of us from over here, and various people have gone their own separate ways, and the core of people who now go is less. But while I've been going over there, I've made other friendships. There's a gang of sort of people who stand on the same bit of terrace that we've always gone on, who are mates of mine. I've got a friend who was introduced to me by my friends from this country who went over, who lives in Spain. There's been a few guys who we've met over there from like Norway and Denmark and Sweden. It's you going to a place where you know you're all there for the same reason. You all love football, quite clearly, but you also love the atmosphere of the games. You love the non-stop chanting. I remember the first game I went to, the opposition scored while the game was going on. And you couldn't tell by the sound. The fans just didn't seem to matter that much, because if you're in England and the opposition score and then you're in your own state, your home stadium, it's like the atmosphere is just sucked out of the whole place. The wall of sound hits you from the away fans, and it's like an audible sigh from everybody else. But it wasn't like that at all. It was just okay, but they've scored, but we're still here, we're all together, and we're going to carry on. And it's more about solidarity than football. It's more about friendship, togetherness, like it used to be. That's kind of what it is for me.
The club's foreign legions have grown accustomed to accusations of football hipsterism, not just from general football fans, but also from some local St. Pauli fans. They're seen as supporting a cool or fashionable club, because the team is cool and fashionable rather than out of genuine love. One common analogy for the situation is...
I saw the other day a four-year-old child wearing a Ramones shirt that they got from Old Navy or something like that, or The Gap, and know nothing about the Ramones, you know, and there might be people walking around with a Skull and Crossbones shirt for the same way because it looks cool, you know. And I think the hardcore fans and most St. Pauli fans would not react well to that, just because it's kind of like it's a bandwagon kind of mentality that won't last. You know, that person who wears that shirt will wear another shirt next year and forget about St. Pauli. But the true fans will stay with St. Pauli through a really bad season, and there's been a couple of bad seasons over the last 4 or 5 years, you know, and the St. Pauli fans, they still come. The Millantor still sells out. There's still as much intensity and passion in all parts of the stadium and online and in the media. So that doesn't change. If you're a true St. Pauli fan, it becomes apparent pretty quickly.
St. Pauli are cool. They walk out to AC/DC. They have a vocal ultras section. Their stadium is plastered with cool art, and the Totenkopf is everywhere. While it's certainly true that it looks great on merchandise, the St. Pauli supporters we speak to strike us as completely genuine in their reasons for supporting the club, regardless on whether they live a few kilometres from the stadium or 3,807 in terms of New York.
It's that whole left-wing, all-inclusive nature of the club, that it doesn't matter what you look like and it doesn't matter what your sexuality is, that it's about coming together and supporting, you know, more of the socialist leanings instead of being right-wing and fascist and being full of hatred.
The core values of the club are put out there for all to see and all to discover very, very easily. So I think if those core values of no racism, this is a community-based club with a global reach and a global perspective, then I think those who share those values immediately feel welcome. Those who don't, well, they move on, I suppose.
So to me, basically, this whole thing, like St. Pauli and the community, and wearing the St. Pauli shirts or patches or whatever, is a true statement, basically, that I can show the world, you know, like where I stand in life with my opinions, you know. So there's not much explanation needed, you know, when you wear a St. Pauli shirt, basically what kind of person you are. I put on that shirt, it has a message which I want to spread, basically. To me, it's also important, like the whole charity thing, to make sense out of this, you know, just like going to a bar, watching a game, drinking beers, being silly, yelling at the screen, or even if you're in the stadium, you know, like yelling funny things, or like, you know, like chanting and whatever. It all only makes sense to me in my life is because of the good things that you can do in combination with watching soccer, you know, by supporting St. Pauli and doing the charity work that we do here in New York for all different kind of causes, and then building the community basically around it. This is basically what is important to me.
Speaking of merchandise, the rapid expansion of St. Pauli worldwide has opened up something of a debate about the St. Pauli ethos. Can St. Pauli be a radical alternative, a punk club, pirates of the league, whatever label you give them, if they're a massively successful commercial operation? St. Pauli are the fourth largest club in Germany in terms of merchandise sales, behind Bayern, Schalke and Dortmund. So, has the hipster club gone mainstream? And if so, does that affect the nature of the club?
No, it doesn't. There's a bit of conflict there. I mean, there's a lot of people who kick back against that, who don't like it. There's a lot of people there who would call themselves pragmatists who say, well, you know, that's part of life, a bit living in a capitalist society. They've got to make money and all that sort of thing. I think that a few years ago, there was a campaign which was called Bring Back St. Pauli, which was basically people were getting a bit fed up with this cult club, this cult marketing. I mean, you look at the shirts that they sell every year, they're usually going sort of like in the upper 70s and nearly 80 euros. Aside of that, the ticket prices are still ridiculously cheap compared to British prices. And, you know, the beer's cheap, you can drink beer. There's all these other things that, you know, they allow fans to have sort of big display. So there's a bit of push and shove in Germany in order to move up the football pyramid, if you like. You know, they're going to have to do that as well because, you know, they don't live in a vacuum. But I think a lot of fans don't enjoy that, and it's kind of, you'll get people drift away because of it. And I certainly, in the group that I've sort of been going with, there's definitely been some of that.
It's a really good question, and it's kind of, you know, it's the tightrope that the club kind of continues to walk. You know, on one level you can be selling shirts for 80 euros or selling hoodies and stuff like that all around the world. And yet the flip side is that, you know, are you still this kind of alternative club with a different set of values? And can those two things exist together? I kind of think they can, because, you know, the commercial side has to exist in terms of they are a professional football club. You know, their ultimate aim on the field is to get back into the Bundesliga and to have that commercial revenue.
will feed back into the club and will enable them to, you know, to have an increased playing budget and compete at a higher level. So I think we have to accept the fact that there is going to always be a level of commercialisation associated with it. I mean, we can't obviously, you know, the popularity thing is linked to that. You know, the Skull and Crossbones, I've been pushing for years, kind of saying that the Skull and Crossbones hoodie is the equivalent of the is the football equivalent of the Ramones T-shirt. You know, people wear it. They don't necessarily understand that it links back to a football club or actually understand what that football club stands for. And, you know, you're always at risk of that. But actually, what you have to do is be a little bit less snobbish, a little bit less elitist about it and think, well, actually, fair enough, people are wearing the shirts or the hoodies because they like them. But, you know, for every 10 or 100 people that do that, you're going to get 2 or 3 who buy into the actual ideal and the values of the club and who want to find out more. And like we said earlier, we're seeing that with kind of growth in fan clubs around the world and people communicating and supporting each other and working on social projects together. It can still retain that punk ethos or, you know, alternative ethos alongside all of that commercialisation. And what, you know, what we have to remember is that 30,000 people for every home game, obviously not all of that 30,000 people are going to be active fans kind of supporting social projects and getting involved in the issues of the day. A fair number of those are over in the business seats on the other side or in the executive boxes. But what you hope is that even those people kind of understand that actually this is St. Pauli, the core values that we stand for are still really important, even if they're not day-to-day actively involved in those things. And you look at what the club has done for refugees in Hamburg, you know, it's the first club with an official refugee football team, and the people behind those projects, you know, are working so hard tackling one of the major issues of, you know, of the 21st century in a football context. You know, it is backed up by something. You know, it's not a myth. It's not something, you know, that is sold out. I really passionately believe that the people at the heart of the club hold those values really dear. And I think we're really lucky to have a president and a supervisory board at the moment who completely understand the fan culture, completely understand where we've come from. We're not going to agree with every decision they make. You know, that just doesn't happen. And St. Pauli fans are especially critical. So there's always going to be a degree of disagreement. But what we have to remember is actually the people in charge of the club have got the club's interest at heart. The club remains an alternative voice. It's not something that has been consumed by the football mainstream. For all of those shirts and hoodies and things that are sold, for all of that, the core values are still there. And people are still as active as perhaps they've always been.
I think St. Pauli is a club that for a very, very long time has existed in tension with itself. And this is just part of the complicated relationship between the club, the supporters, the club, and its image. I mean, there's even been tensions amongst supporters and other supporters. I think it's something that's constantly held in check and balance, but it is something that is an ongoing discussion. And as long as that discussion keeps happening, I think we're in a safe place. As soon as we stop having that conversation amongst ourselves and with ourselves, I think it's a good place to be.
You have to accept it to a certain extent, because at the end of the day, it is partially a business. And we live in the modern world where you have to make a certain amount of money to be able to invest money into the club. I know a number of supporters that refuse to buy, you know, the Under Armour branded items, and then they go to the Fon Lauden instead and will buy, you know, something that's
independently produced.
Yeah, independently produced and doesn't have the corporate sponsorship on it. And I think that's more of the choice of the fans if they want to do it, because at least some of that money still goes back to the club without having to support some of those sponsors that we don't necessarily agree with.
It is somewhat apparent that you can take the club out of St. Pauli, but you can't take St. Pauli out of the club. St. Pauli remain a club unlike any other because they have been able to have such a profound positive impact on their fans. For all of the football hipsters rocking their snazzy new away kit that maybe don't fully understand the St. Pauli way, the net result of the new global St. Pauli is undeniably a positive one. A cursory glance at the Facebook pages of the fan groups will show you the work done for a range of good causes, particularly Viva Con Agua and some refugee charities. The true measure of any football fan support is what their club means to them. St. Pauli may be different, but the passion with which their fans talk about their experiences following them is something that is universal.
My favourite memory probably still is that first game that I went to. It was back in 2007, coming up for 10 years ago now. And it was first round of the German Cup at home to Bayer Leverkusen. And I went with my dad, which was lovely. And we went over there and obviously didn't know as much as I know about the club now. But we had standing tickets on the Gegengrade, on the old Gegengrade. It was just one of those magical moments that kind of took you back to that first time you went to football as a kid. Because, you know, we walked up the steps, came out, and there we were on a terrace full of people. You know, the crowd were incredible from the start. There was a fantastic choreo to start with. And the match itself, you're playing a bigger team from the Bundesliga. So that was pretty exciting. And we managed to win with an 87th minute goal, I think, from Fabian Boll, which was scored down near the end that we were at. And of course, the atmosphere then afterwards was incredible. And the thing that really struck both me and my dad, having been to football together for years, was that, you know, at the final whistle, nobody went home. And you partly thought, well, is this because it's like a massive cup shock and, you know, there's been an upset? And we were chatting to people and they said, no, it's like this pretty much every game. Nobody leaves straight away. And this was our first experience of that kind of culture continuing on after the match. And, you know, it was probably a good half an hour after the final whistle that we kind of finally made our way out of the stadium. And you know, to have that experience and to share that with my dad, who'd taken me to my first, you know, match all those years previously, was incredible. My second favourite memory, it gets so hard because there's been so many good ones, is probably we went on the Sonderzug, which is the end of season party train put on by the Fanladen 2 years ago now in 2015 down to Darmstadt on the last day of the season. We were in danger of being relegated to the third division and we kind of had to win in order to guarantee not to be relegated. Somehow, through a bizarre series of kind of results, we managed to stay up but still lose the game. But the best bit was going back on the train, which is about a 4 or 5 hour train journey. The Sonderzug, the train itself, has two disco carriages, a bar, and we came back and it's with the guys from Yorkshire St. Pauli and just had the most amazing time celebrating avoiding relegation. And the most wonderful thing was Ewald Lienen, the manager, came back on the train. So he didn't go back on the coach on the team bus with most of the squad. Him and a couple of players came back on the train and were kind of partying with the rest of us. And I just have this lasting memory of kind of meeting Ewald in the disco carriage, embracing him and saying something, you know, kind of drunkenly incoherent in English, and just having that kind of wonderful moment. So that was particularly fantastic. And then obviously you kind of get back into Hamburg at kind of 1 in the morning. And the other favourite bit about that is my friend Sean, I was with, did the thing that I've never actually seen anybody do whilst getting off a train. He stepped off the train and managed to lodge himself in the gap between the train and the platform, which I think is probably an indication of what a fantastic kind of day and evening we'd had.
The away win at HSV, it was the 16th February of 2011. I can still imagine the day. That was really, really great. This was the game in the second half of the season, so our home game. We were 1-0 up until, I don't know, 2 or 3 minutes before the final whistle, and then they managed to score the equalizer. So this was really, really sad. But then we won at their stadium, and this was, of course, really, really great because most of us really waited a lifetime for that. Then there were some really great moments, not always connected to the football game itself, but also for just the experience of the game or the traveling to a game. So we do some away trains from time to time, and there we always had a certain motto, like for example some years ago when we were traveling to Gütersloh, there is a very old German song that the last cowboy comes from Gütersloh. Don't ask me why they made up this song, I don't know. And then we made the motto, okay, cowboys and Indians, and there were, I don't know, 800 people in cowboys and Indians costumes going on that train, traveling to Gütersloh, watching the match. It was so great atmosphere, and there are several things like that. Of course, overall, we have this 1-0 win at HSV.
But what next for St. Pauli? In an age of Trump and Brexit, is there a place for a left-wing football club?
I was fortunate enough to go out and do a book talk in Portland at the Portland Timbers fan Laden, arranged by some guys from their Twitter account is Booked107, and they're like a community project that lends football books across Portland and does lots of other things to encourage reading and that kind of stuff. And I went out and did a talk with them. And obviously, in the lead up to arranging that trip, Trump was elected. Once we got out there, you know, it became really obvious that actually making these kind of connections with other progressive fan groups is more important than ever. You know, with Trump increasing the isolationist, the kind of Brexit, like turning away from the rest of Europe, and across Europe, the kind of rise in general nationalism, as these kind of things take hold, we need a counterpoint. And actually, St. Pauli fans around the world can, you know, can be part of that, because I don't think it's any coincidence that now it seems to be every day on Twitter there's a new St. Pauli international kind of fan group setting up, you know, across America, across the world. And you sort of think, I'm sure this is, you know, partly to do with the club's popularity and all of those kind of things. But there's just that need to feel like we belong to an alternative, or there are other like-minded people out there. And just having that, those conversations on Twitter or wherever it is in English, making you realise actually we don't all think that Brexit's a great idea. We don't, you know, we haven't all voted for Trump. We don't all think that actually closing down borders and all of that kind of stuff and turning against other nations is the way forward. And actually working together progressively as part of a kind of left-wing alternative to all of that is really important. And I think, bizarrely, St. Pauli, you know, is coming to symbolise that even more now. And as we move forward, you know, we've seen that the kind of the response that St. Pauli as a club has done to the refugee crisis in Hamburg. And you think that is just the embodiment of their values. Bizarrely, football has a role to play in that. And definitely St. Pauli and St. Pauli fans have a role to play in that as well.
We're not alone. You know, there's a lot of people who are, you know, frankly outraged with what's been going on. And so, you know, we've showed up for marches and demonstrations. And I mean, on a much smaller community level, a bunch of us watched the election results come in all together and made sure the couple of us who are living here long term got, you know, plenty of whiskey that evening. I'm hoping that more people here can find us, you know, that we can grow this community in a time like this when there is so much going on politically that's such a big conflict to everything that we believe in. I mean, that was the reason that it was so important to us to support immigration issues this year with our charity work, because without that, we wouldn't be here.
As divided as the country basically is over the whole issue, Trump, this country has never seen anything like this before, like how big the division is basically between the two parties, if you say so. But the positive thing is, like, what I find, and I actually feel it, that the community basically on the anti-Trump side, so to say, is moving closer together, having a feeling of a common aim, like to do something about this.
St. Pauli's fans feel more emboldened in their fight for the left-wing ideals of the club. As ever, the real battle at St. Pauli will not be on the pitch, but rather the fans fighting to maintain the identity and values of their club. For all the sneers about hypocrisy and hipsterism, St. Pauli's values in the current political climate we find ourselves are perhaps more relevant now than ever before. Thank you for listening to this episode of Who Are You? As with our previous episodes, we'd love to be heard beyond the fanbase of the club we feature. And with that in mind, we'd be massively grateful if you could leave us a review on iTunes or maybe whack out a tweet promoting our show. If you'd like to suggest the next club we should cover or have any general feedback or questions, feel free to email us at whoareyoupodcast@gmail.com or tweet us at whoareyoupod. We'd love to hear from you. Thank you to everyone we spoke to for this episode. Mike from Millington, Nick Davison, who helped us despite some technical difficulties, Gary Padgett, Sean and Samantha from Fell in Love with a Girl, Mark from Toronto St. Pauli, and Sean and Soren from New York St. Pauli. And don't forget Nick's book, Pirates, Punks and Politics, an excellent read if you want to discover more about St. Pauli. The interviews for this episode were conducted by myself, Ben Cartwright, and my co-producer, David Cowlishaw. David wrote this episode and I did the editing. If you want to follow us on Twitter, we're at BAJ Cartwright and at David Cowlishaw. Thanks again for listening. See you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.